Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the fifth canto, chapter 14. Chapter is entitled The Forest of Enjoyment. And today we're on text 6. Another unmetered sloka, so I'll just chant it, and then we'll do the word for word in translation. Chatra cha kwachid atapodaka niban vishayan upadavati panapo jana vyavyadi vyasana lolupa tatra. There. In this phantom place. Cha. Also. Kwachit. Sometimes. Atapa udaka niban. Like the water in a mirage in the desert. Vishayan. The objects of sense enjoyment. Upadavati runs after pana to drinking, bhajana to eating, vyavaya to sex life, adi and so on, vyasana with addiction, lolupa, a debauchee. Translation and purport by Mr. Vangrace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes in this house, in this sky, Gandharva Pura, the conditioned soul drinks, eats, and has sex. Being overly attached, he chases after the objects of the senses, just as a deer chases a mirage in the desert. Please repeat. Sometimes in this house, in the sky, Gandharva Pura, the conditioned soul drinks, eats, and has sex. Being overly attached, he chases after the objects of the senses. Just as a deer chases a mirage in the desert. Purport. There are two worlds, the spiritual and the material. The material world is false, like a mirage in the desert. In the desert, animals think they see water, but actually there is none. Similarly, those who are animalistic try to find peace within the desert of material life. It's repeatedly said in different shastras that there's no pleasure in this material world. Furthermore, even if we agree to live without pleasure, we are not allowed to do so. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that the material world is not only full of miseries, dukkhalayam, but also temporary, ashashvatam. Even if we want to live here amid miseries, material nature will not allow us to do so. It will oblige us to change bodies and enter another atmosphere full of miserable conditions. Translation again. Sometimes in this house, in the sky, Gandharva Pura, the conditioned soul drinks, eats, and has sex. Being overly attached, he chases after the objects of the senses, just as a deer chases a mirage in the desert. Om Aganatim Anandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Amritam Gena Tejmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Today's verse reminds me of the first verse of the Bhagavatam. This was spoken by Srila Vyasadeva, and actually the acharyas described the first three slokas of the Bhagavatam as a prelude to the Bhagavatam. And the first verse describes the absolute truth. And Prabhupada differentiates the conception of God and the conception of the absolute truth in the introduction to the Bhagavatam, where he says, God refers to the controller. And the conception of the absolute truth is actually far greater than that. And Prabhupada describes that as the ultimate source of all energies. So, and then the second verse describes the Bhagavatam and, you know, how it doesn't, it's not involved at all with cheating religiosity. So, there's some, and these are very significant verses. Matter of fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lectured in Dhaka, which is now Bangladesh, for 3 months on this first shloka. So, there's an awful lot that could be said about it, and I'm just going to touch on some of the key points that parallel what's going on in this shloka, what's being presented in this shloka. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadyasha Yaton Unvayad Itratas Chateshva Bhigya Surat Tene Brahmarudaya Arikavye Muyantiyat Surya Tejovari Midam Yata Vinimeo Trisargo Mesa Damna Swena Sada Nyarastra Kuhukam Satyam Param Dimahi. So, first, Vyasadeva offers his respectful obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, the all-pervading personality of Godhead. And then he meditates, he says he meditates upon the absolute truth, who's the source of all creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. And he is directly and indirectly conscious of all living, or of all manifestations. And he's independent because there's no other cause beyond him. And he first imparted Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahmaji. So then, Muyanti Yat Suryaha. This is what connects with today's verse. By him, even the great sages and demigods are bewildered, just as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. And only because of him do the material universe is temporarily manifested by the interaction of the three modes of material nature appear factual, although they're unreal. I therefore meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally situated in his transcendental abode, which is forever free of the illusory representations of this material world. So, when there is a mirage, I used to do traveling Sankirtan in the Midwest of the United States, and we go through these vast tracts of desert land. And there wouldn't be mountains. It would just be endless stretch of highway and treeless plains and sand. And in the distance, you would see what would look like a big lake. Now, the only reason that I could say that it looked like a big lake is because I've seen a big lake before, and therefore I've got a connection between this mirage and what a real lake looks like. And so the acharyas give a kind of parallel, and Srila Vyasadeva does, this mirage, you know, of water seen in a desert. Or like there's one mistakes a rope for a snake. So you can't mistake the rope for a snake unless you've seen a snake before, unless you know what a snake is. So the rope, the snake, the water, the desert, these are all conceptions that are there. So there's an origin in reality. Reality, at least in the context of the mundane realm. So the jiva, when he comes into the material world, he is pursuing the mirage of happiness, eternal happiness in the material realm. And the reason he's doing this is because there is a reality that may be greatly covered by, you know, the illusory potency of the Lord, you know, many, many layers of lust on his consciousness. But there is this ultimate reality of his real home, where there is eternal happiness, unlimited happiness. And so he's trying to pursue this in this material world, which Prabhupada cites in the purport. It's chapter 8, text 15. Mamupetya punarjanma dukhaliyam ashashvatam natnuvanti mahatmana samsidhim paramam gata. So those great souls who are yogis in devotion, once they never return to this material world once they achieve the highest perfection. Because they're there, they're completely out of the illusion. You know, they're no longer dealing with the mirage. But they're, fully satisfied because they've achieved the real reality. So sometimes I remember seeing movies when I was a young boy of people dying of thirst on the desert. And they were just crawling, you know, to get to this mirage that they would see. And then it was like, I think they used special effects to create this whole hallucinatory situation. I seem to recall, a little vague, and I'm getting to be an old man, but maybe some of you have seen movies like this where someone's just crawling to get, and then it's not there. So that's what this material world is like. The devotee, you see, what the Bhagavatam does, it makes it clear what the real reality is and what the illusory reality is and where it comes from, where the illusory reality comes from. It's coming from Krishna. And there's a reason behind this. This is all part of Sambandha Gyan that is very essential for our spiritual advancement. Without it, we'll mistake the mirage for reality and just fall into maya. This is a problem all of us probably at one point or other have experienced, right? I mean, you know, we're susceptible to the material energy until we come to the liberated platform. So if we understand that actually this is a mirage and that the suffering that takes place can be transformed into happiness, this is a point that the acharyas make. Like in the second verse, dharma projita kaitavo tra nirmatsaranam satam. So this can only be understood by nirmatsaranam, someone who's fully pure in heart, free from envy. So, what is, how does envy manifest in this world? Ichudvesha sumutvena dvandva mohena bharata. I mean, everyone in a conditioned state has that part of their consciousness. So, someone will become extremely competitive with others. You know, I want to beat this guy out. I want to get to the top. So the icha is mixed in there with the envy. You know, this desire to be the supreme, to predominate. Ultimately, there's envy of Krishna, and then a feeling of satisfaction when those that we're competing against meet with misfortune. And, aha, this guy just died, or he just, something horrible happened to him. And, you know, there's a sense of satisfaction. Actually, one's happy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that is it in Sharanagati? I feel a sense of happiness at the suffering of others. This is the mindset that's driven by envy. So, for the devotee, there's a whole different set of values. We're not, the devotee, is oriented towards giving pleasure to Krishna, not becoming top dog in the material world. So the same kind of, he's not competing for sense gratification. He's not trying to diminish someone. This is the whole process of kutinati, this weed of fault-finding, duplicitous behavior, putting someone else down, thinking that this will put me up. So he doesn't engage in this because he's got a whole different value system. He wants to come to Krishna. He wants to please Krishna. Krishna is the orient, the central point in his life. So it's a whole different system of setting values and priorities. So therefore, when one moves in this direction, he becomes increasingly free from envy. And this enables him to actually understand the Bhagavatam, this non-envious mentality. So then, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam Tapatrayan Mulanam. So, this verse translates, completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. So that's a very interesting concept. And I mean, if we can correlate it with today's verse, this truth completely is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Okay, so the Bhagavatam provides the highest reality, which is Krishna's spiritual world, that's our real home. There's the original sexology, as Prabhupada describes, of the relationships between Krishna and Srimati Radharani, Krishna and the gopis, and the perverted reflection in this verse. The conditioned soul drinks, eats, and has sex. It becomes very attached in this way. So there's a much higher reality that's presented in the Bhagavatam in the spiritual realm, in the spiritual world. So there's this contrast, but then there's also recognition that Krishna, like the whole, much of the second canto and third canto, deals with the creation of the material realm. So a devotee begins to understand more and more, this is actually coming from Krishna, which means also the distresses are coming from Krishna. So then, how then tapa chayan mulanam? How does it uproot the threefold miseries? The Bhagavatam, how does it do that? I'll pause so you can all reflect on this. It's a challenging concept, because if I fall down the steps and break my leg, this is a very real experience. It's actually happened to me as a devotee. I once broke my leg, and it hurt. So how does that, and I was regularly reading the Bhagavatam, regularly going to Bhagavatam classes. So how do I put this in a perspective where these threefold miseries, Adiatmaka Klesha, Adibodhaka Klesha, and Adidaivaka Klesha, are uprooted? Okay, everyone strained their brain to the max, try and enter into understanding of that. Well, we can draw some help from 10.14.8, Tateinu kampam shukshumikshumano bunjane vatmakritam vipakam ridvag vaprabhiravididhan namaste jivetayo muktipade sadayabhat. One who always seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that they're coming about as a result of one's past misdeeds, and goes on rendering service with body, mind, and words, offering obeisances from the core of his heart, then that person becomes eligible to enter into pure devotional service. So the devotee, when he meets with material distress, he can actually transform it into happiness, because he can see that Krishna is actually sending this to him to detach him from the material realm, to dissipate the enjoying consciousness that may still be there in a trace-like form, that same consciousness that propels, the trace of that consciousness that propels the materialist through endless lifetimes of trying to enjoy the mirage of material happiness. And actually, the devotee can actually see this and receive the distress with great happiness, because he can see actually Krishna's bringing him back to him through this distressful circumstance. Right? Does that connect with everybody? I mean, Hare Krishna. We may not be on Queen Kunti's platform, Vipada Shantuta Shashvat Tutra Tutra Chagaguru Bhavato Darshanam Yachat Apana Bhava Darshana. When she was praying, may all those calamities happen again and again, because when they happen, and they happened a lot to her and her sons, right? Then Krishna would come and he'd help out. And then she prays, when we would see you, Krishna, then we no longer see repeated birth and death. So as a devotee goes through distressful circumstance after distressful circumstance, sincerely tries to apply the philosophy contained in 10.14.8, and starts to gain some understanding that actually this is for my betterment that Krishna is sending, and he's very kindly putting me in one situation after another where I have to cry to him in his holy name, and then there's like realization. Yeah, I actually am not my body. There's a higher reality than this mirage that has got everyone locked in, driven, to try and enjoy, and I'm getting an opportunity to escape from this powerful illusion that Krishna has provided the living entity so that he can try to enjoy separately from him. And when I actually start viewing things in this way, when I actually start processing the material suffering in this way, then not only do realizations come, but my ability to taste Krishna's name, experience transcendental happiness increases. And after all, Prabhupada does say on page 91 of the Nectar Devotion, where he paraphrases this 10.14.8, that this should be the guiding principle for all devotees, applying this verse in our lives. I'm not sure if I told this story or not. I think maybe I did. I tell it oftentimes in this connection. It's about Vyasaki. And did I mention this here? I tell it so many times. My grandfather, when I was under the age of 10, he lived with us. He was a Christian minister, and he had reached senility, you know, when he was staying with us, and he would tell the same story over and over again at meals. He'd tell the same jokes, and it was little, you know, he felt sorry for the old guy. So if I tell the same story again, I don't know if I'm asking you to feel sorry for me, but at least bear with me. But let me know if you've heard it before. Srila Prabhupada's centennial 1996 was observed. This is a conjoint effort of the centennial committee and the GBC body by petals of a lotus flower. And there was one petal that represented the effort by the Centennial Committee to observe Prabhupada's centennial of reuniting Srila Prabhupada's family. Have I told this? No, okay. Whew. It's a good story. Vyasaki Prabhu, who took his last five births in Bengal and this last one in America, was a famous ISKCON musician. He, before the centennial, 2 years prior to the centennial, traveled all over the world and met with over 500 devotees that had stopped practicing Krishna consciousness and had disassociated themselves from ISKCON. And he met with them, and the Centennial Committee published two magazines that observe this petal of uniting Srila Prabhupada's family. And they were called the Unity Magazine. Almost sounds a little Christian, doesn't it? And the first issue, and the first article of the first issue, was an interview of Vyasaki about his experience in visiting these over 500 devotees that had stopped practicing Krishna consciousness. And right in the first statement, he said he found two common denominators amongst all these devotees. One is that they still had deep love and respect for Srila Prabhupada. And two, somehow or other, they were unable to accommodate the philosophy that is presented in Tateno Kampam Sukshmiksamano. Kind of mind-blowing when you think about it. So we can understand why Srila Prabhupada put this on such a high level of priority in chapter 10 of Nectar Devotion on page 91, where he says this should be the guide, not the guiding principle, but this should be the guide for all devotees. Because after all, it's Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. And sometimes the distresses can be overwhelming, absolutely mind-blowing, you know, how intense they can be. So unless we're very fixed in some bandhagan and an understanding of the transcendental art of transcendental jujitsu, taking the negative energy and turning it around, turning it into transcendental bliss, it can knock us out of the path. I mean, pretty powerful testimony, you know, that 500 devotees. And it wasn't like he was just selecting those 500 devotees that couldn't apply tatte nukam pam shuksham ikshamano in his life. He was just, somehow or other, he came across these devotees. I think he spent a lot of time in the San Francisco Bay Area, because there's a lot of devotees there that just kind of, that's where they ended up, you know, when they stopped practicing. Many, somehow or other. And oftentimes, these devotees, this is, I think, another point that came up in this interview, if I'm not mistaken, that many of them became discouraged and illusioned and weren't able to process the pain that came at the hands of other devotees. You know, and oftentimes they felt mistreated by devotees in leadership positions. It was very heavy after Prabhupada left. You know, the leaders were quite new. I mean, everyone was new to Krishna consciousness. You know, I mean, the oldest devotee was 11 years in the movement. I mean, practically everybody in the room here is 11 years in the movement, with just a few exceptions. And, you know, you can imagine the kind of weight that falls on, you know, the whole movement, you know, taking disciples, and dealing with God brothers. And it's, you know, I mean, we got to understand that it's understandable why there was so many mishaps when you really look at it. And so, you know, the movement's matured and there's less abuse going on, you know, between leaders and followers, and less fall downs, and you know, there's much more training. Rasamandala Prabhu Kijai, and other devotees involved in education, you know, really struggling, you know, to give devotees a life, you know, give them stability, you know, in this mirage of material world, and give them a vision, you know, of how to make, you know, go the distance in this lifetime, you know, stay stable and fixed in Krishna consciousness, get the underpinnings of a proper vanashram situation, you know, so that stability can be there. So the Bhagavatam plays a very vital role in allowing us to dispel illusion and not be, victims of it. To really see things as they are, and it's not so easy because of our conditioning. We're trained in this world of empiric knowledge acquisition, you know, pratyaksha. It's an acceptable means of knowledge acquisition, but it's extremely fallible, you know, because we're conditioned souls. We're subject to illusion, pramada. We have karnapatava. We have imperfect senses. And what else? We make mistakes, brahma, right? And viprilipsa. We have this tendency to cheat, to present ourselves as something that we're not. Prabhupada in the purport, or in the introduction to Ishapanishad, that he describes this viparlipsa tendency as someone presenting himself as an extremely intelligent person, but yet he's fool number one. I use a photograph that I got off of the Yale University graduation, or off the Yale University website. It was a graduation ceremony, and there was this young female student just in ecstasy from graduating. You know, she really looked like fool number one, you know, in this photograph, and I use it in my PowerPoint presentation on that. But that this is what we see, you know, generally speaking, you know, people are presenting themselves as much greater than what they really are. And this is the mechanism of pride, right? Whereas a humble Vaishnava, you know, he's not making a big show. He knows he's, you know, made a big mistake, came into the material world, and you know, now he's trying to situate himself properly and realistically as a dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. Okay, how are we doing time-wise? Yeah. Maybe we should stop here, and see, maybe there's some questions or comments. And, yes, Manohar Prabhu. If he gives us that's sixth chapter, I believe. Yeah. I never learned it either. So, the living entity is responsible, ultimately, for the reactions that he comes. Yeah, he has this choice. He has the choice. That's why I'm saying this transcendental jujitsu. We can, you know, when suffering comes our way, by not applying the philosophy that's contained within Tate Nukampam Shukshum Ikshamano and the commentaries of the Acharyas, where we understand that actually this is Krishna coming to help me, putting me in a difficult position to dissipate the enjoying spirit that's in my heart, those vestiges of enjoying spirit. So the example that I used of these 500 devotees, they didn't use this transcendental jujitsu. Like when I say transcendental jujitsu, like let's say Rasamana gets really upset with me and he comes and he wants to sack me in the nose, and I take his fist and use that force that he's going to use to put me on the floor, and I turn it around and flip him over with it. Okay, that's what jujitsu is based on, right? Judo. You know, you use this opposing negative energy and you take it and you use it against the person that's attacking you, right? So the material energy, in one sense, these adverse reactions, you know, it's an attack, you know, on our this illusory sense of well-being that we want to try and maintain in the material world, this sense of illusory sense of happiness. So when the sufferings come for a devotee, it can be a source of, it can prompt us to allow our minds to degrade us. You know, we can say, oh man, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm so hurt. I'm so discouraged. You know, I've been so mistreated. Bye-bye. You know, and not really be able to accommodate and process it according to our philosophy. Now, it's not to condone, you know, someone in a leadership position mistreating a devotee, but there's a verse, I think it's 11th canto, 16th chapter. This is Lord Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. And Krishna launches into a discussion of this avadut who gives instructions to Maharaj Yadu. And this avadut, Maharaj Yadu asks, how is it that you are so blissfully transcendental? And you're traveling here and there, and you're just in complete ecstasy. What is your secret? And so this avadut unpacks, you know, the means by which he achieved self-realization. And he describes 24 gurus. And the first guru is the earth. So, and he described, let's see if I can paraphrase this now. The verse basically goes something like this, that the sober understand that when one is harassed by other living entities, these attackers are acting helplessly under the control of God. Under the control of God. G-O-D. So forgive my New York accent. I'm sorry. You can't imagine the level of bewilderment that takes place because I don't speak Indian English in India. My God, you know, I got to slow down. I have people in the class that raise their hand when my accent becomes too thick and I'm talking too fast, just so that, you know, I can slow it down and enunciate properly. So forgive me. This conditioning of speech goes very deep, right? I mean, it's very difficult to change these kind of patterns. So, yeah, that we understand this is what we can learn from the earth. I mean, the earth tolerates oil drillings, nuclear explosions, you know, being soaked by the blood of big wars. You know, but it still, you know, produces, you know, gives everyone what they need to live. You know, fruits and vegetables. And so we shouldn't, you know, in spite of, you know, if we understand that these attackers are functioning helplessly under the control of, how do you say it? God? This little speech therapy lesson here. God? God. Okay. How'd I do? God? Okay. All right. Okay, so, and he doesn't become, oh my God. Okay, he doesn't become distracted from his path. This is what one should do. He doesn't become, even if he's being attacked, he doesn't become, you know, deflected, you know, from his path. This is what we have to do. We have to, and why is this person attacking me? Manohar Prabhu, you've been in administration here for long. You ever have anybody attack you? Yeah. Right? It happens. That comes quite a bit. My God, you can't imagine some of the things I've been through. But if we understand that this person actually, he's acting helplessly under the control of God. I say that right? My God. I mean, my God. Then it's possible, you know, and Krishna, that's a little easier for me to pronounce. I say it so many times a day. I'm probably mispronouncing that according to the Belgium standard, too. but then it makes it possible to, you know, if this person's acting helplessly under the control of Krishna, then it's possible to see how Krishna's behind it. And then if we know that Krishna's our ever well-wishing friend, he wants us to come back to him more than we do, because we're still caught in this mirage. And, you know, then we can experience Krishna's love through the attack of some crazy new, I'm going to say bhakta, but, you know, and then he's going to smile and probably think that I'm directing at him. No. I mean, you know, sometimes it happens, you know, that someone just, this temple president, oh my God, you know, he's driving me completely crazy. He doesn't understand how exalted I am. He doesn't know how hard I'm trying, and he's still chastising me. You know, how, you know, and then, so I'm going to give it back to him, right? And so then, but the thought process is that went through, not this back to, he's pretty pure. But, you know, they're all coming from Super Soul, right? I mean, they're sanctioned and, you know, Krishna's arranging the whole thing for poor Manohar's purification, you know. So, I mean, because he loves Manohar so much, Right? I mean, these are the kind of thought processes that the devotees actually start picking up, you know, and it actually allows them to remain transcendentally situated in spite of all hell breaking loose in their lives. Tigache? Do you know what that means? What? Huh? Well, something like that. Do you know what language it's in? Bengali, right. I thought I'd just do a little one-upmanship on you because I don't know how to pronounce God properly. Okay? Okay, any other questions or comments? Did I do okay with that? Yeah, okay. Thank you. Yes, Mataji. Okay, now, remember, Ami Paran Manush. Remember what that means? Ami Paran Manush. Ami means I, Paran means old, and Manush means man. So I'm an old man, I don't hear so well, so you got to speak loudly. Okay? You got to speak a little, turn it up, turn the volume up a little bit. You're a very sober Mataji, but it's hard sometimes for me to converse with you because you talk softly. That's part of your sobriety, I think. But just pretend that you're going to give a Bhakti Shastri class, okay, on Skype, okay, to the congregation. So everyone's got to hear you, right? So speak. What? Okay, go ahead, sorry. I won't interrupt you again. That's good. Okay. Compost. Good. Wow. Okay, that's another something, a new story that I can add to my repertoire of how to deal with suffering. Good. Everyone hear that? Yeah, good. So all of our garbage we can turn into something positive, all of the anarthas, if we handle it properly. Right? Anarthas and suffering circumstances, which to a large extent are caused by our anarthas, the suffering that we go through. Krishna's got to do something about it because it's blocking our spiritual advancement. Right? Yes, Mataji? Okay, remember, Ami Paran Manush. Okay? I have to say this to all the ladies because they speak so softly. Okay, I'm putting my asbestos suit on. Okay? Go ahead. Okay, can you start over again and say it again, a little bit louder? Some of it is I just started thinking about other things, but it's good practice for, you know, you're going to be a teacher someday, so to enunciate and speak very loudly. The way it works. the analogy that's given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jiva Dharma in this regard, not necessarily about suffering, but just about when one is a new devotee, inexperienced, and maybe not so advanced, it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares that situation to someone who's sick. And he can't get well on his own. He needs a doctor's care. He needs a doctor to administer the medicine, to supervise his diet. And he can't do it on his own. And that's really the way it is as devotees, you know, and therefore, you know, like they've met with a lot of success in Chopadi, Pune, and Ukraine with the counseling system. And essentially that's what takes place, whereas the more senior, more advanced devotee gives shelter and guidance to someone who's maybe struggling. And so as we can understand from Vyasaki's world tour over a two-year period and his interview, that one of the most challenging circumstances that devotees undergo is when they're experiencing high levels of distress. And so that's, you know, I mean, even in the material realm, you know, that's what shrinks do, you know, psychiatrists and counselors, you know, my wife left me, you know, You know, they go on and on and on, you know, and then, well, can you tell me about your childhood? And, you know, so, but for devotees, you know, they got all of this, like, incredible knowledge, you know, how to deal with challenging circumstances. And, you know, the survivors of many tests, they've learned a lot, you know, about the application of tatte nukampam shukshamiksamano, you know, how it can really be a guide, not just a guide, but a friend. You know, living with the scriptures, we have to learn to actually, you know, like if someone's drowning, you know, he grabs for the lifesaver, you know, and these shlokas can really save our devotional lives. And then we can go deeper and deeper into them as Krishna puts us through one test after another so that, you know, we take shelter. And then that's the guidance that the senior devotees will give. Coming from Shastra, that's what Guru gives. It's all coming from Shastra. Therefore, we should become learned in Shastra. And that propels us to our spiritual lives. This is the qualification. Faith in analogous Shastra is a qualification for making spiritual advancement. And Rami is going to sign everybody up for the Bhakti Shastri course after class. Okay? Yes, bro. We have to pray to God. Oh, this is the French pronunciation of God. Okay. That's even more challenging than the American God. God. Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, okay. Okay, connect what? Okay. Feel blissful in Krishna consciousness. Seems like, boy, that's a real, like, Hare Krishna gymnastic. Like, it's this very intense yoga asana, right? Where, you know, you're just twisting your, like, human emotions into an impossible posture. Well, the cry, can I don't know your names, these two little girls here. When was the last time you cried? This morning? Wow! Okay. And that was quite a powerful experience, right? I mean, were you crying for your mother? No? You were crying for your father? I think he's in Canada right now, right? You were crying to Krishna. You were just crying. Okay. Your mother woke you up to come to the temple, right? Then you wanted to go back to sleep. All right. That's a pretty good reason. I sometimes cry for the same ones. Okay. Generally speaking, now that cry is a very intense emotion, right? That's why it's used to describe. So it's like right from the very core of one's heart. Hare Krishna. And right from the very core of one's heart. And because when a child, I was thinking she was crying for her mother, but maybe that happens when you're a little younger, right? Okay, when you grow up a little bit, then you just cry to the impersonal Brahman. You just cry more in general. It's just the pain of existence. But why do we experience pleasure? Wait, this is a rhetorical question. Why do we experience pleasure? To stimulate cerebral activity. We experience pleasure as devotees because of... Anybody? Why do we experience pleasure? What do we do that allows us to experience the Lodini Shakti in our lives? Experience transcendental bliss. Say again? Okay. So that means I should shut my big mouth and end the class? And like something along those lines, right? Okay. I was wondering, everyone's kind of looking at me like, you know, they're smiling at me. And okay, it's that time. All right, so I don't know, maybe we should continue this discussion later. Okay, I don't want to get in the way of progress here. All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.